Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Timber Living Log Cabins. For your perfect workspace, living space or hideaway, timberliving.ie.
Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1.
So it's that time of the week when we look and see what's on our big and small screens. With me, our radio producer Owen Sweeney and Gráinne Humphreys, Festival Director for the Dublin International Film Festival. You're both very, very welcome.
Good to see you.
Gráinne, a bit disappointed. You're just back from Cannes. You're not in Laguna. I was expecting the glamour.
I don't even have a tan, which just proves I've spent most of my time in the cinema.
Yes, for our listeners out there, Owen is looking indeed very, very glamorous. Take us through some of the headlines. Obviously, for the third time, a woman has won the coveted Palme d'Or.
Which is fantastic, actually. I mean, you know, in a way, it's really nice, actually, Cannes at the moment, because for many, many years, it was kind of accused of being a kind of dinosaur and slightly misogynistic and kind of not really embracing the change that was happening in the industry. And the last 2 years, Giulio De Corno, who was on the jury this year, she won last year with Titane, and this year it was the turn of French director Justine Triet with a film called Anatomy of a Fall, which was my favourite film. So I was very happy and delighted that the jury concurred with my opinion. And then runner-up was another...
Actually, she also took her the opportunity to pour forth on matters political.
She did. And she was great, actually, because, you know, it's obviously a moment where you go up in front of this huge auditorium, which is one of the best places to see a film. But it's a very emotional point. And yet she thanked everyone, thanked all her cast and her crew, and then very, strategically used her platform to sort of make comments and very strong pointed comments about Macron and the strikes. And I felt like it was a really wonderful piece of both a political statement, but also about a filmmaker kind of using this particular kind of global platform to show the power of an artist, particularly in France.
Yeah, I think they do it kind of much better. There's sort of less tears than you'd find at the Oscars. In terms of then the winners and even the festival, the best actor winner, Perfect Days, went to Wim Wenders.
Yeah, it went to Wim Wenders. I mean, Wim Wenders is he's won, many of the filmmakers in this year's competition have won the Palme d'Or before. Ken Loach, Wim Wenders. So it was lovely to see, his film getting recognised with the Best Actor Award. Aki Kaurismäki, was honoured with an award as well, a very long time kind of Cannes favourite. Jonathan Glazer won the sort of runner-up, if you like, award with a film called The Zone of Interest, which is based on a Martin Amis novel, which is quite controversial and in some ways was probably leading, I think, many people's expectations. One film I really want to flag is a beautiful film that was third, that won Best Director, which is a film called Put au Feu, which is a beautiful French film about food. It's 2 hours of Benoît Magimel and Juliette Binoche cooking, and it's just it was nearly impossible. It's 8:30 in the morning to actually the rumble of stomachs around you as everyone went, not another beautiful meal, and we all legged it out quickly to get an omelette before we legged it back into the cinema.
My favourite curiosity this year was not the Palme d'Or but the Palme Dog. What was that about?
The Palme Dog has been running for many years. It's a competition to see what's the best performance by a dog, and so many times you had people coming out saying the film was mediocre, they didn't really like the approach or the style or the subject, but there was a brilliant dog in it. And this year, Messi, a border collie who had played Snoop in Anatomy of a Fall, the film that won the Palme d'Or, won the Palme Dog. And many of the directors and actors go to the small ceremony that happens just before the actual main ceremony. Tilda Swinton, Ken Loach, they all go and they accept their awards on behalf of their canine counterparts.
And I think that's absolutely fantastic. Owen, looking incredibly glamorous, but back to the real world of TV. Something enjoying a little bit of a golden age is a documentary, several of which are out this week.
Yes, indeed. Indeed. Will I start with Kevin Moore and Codebreaker?
Yeah, we heard earlier from him.
Yes. I like the title. It's always kind of...
what does Codebreakers mean?
If Kevin Moore and you go, what an interesting life, what a great story, let's do something about it. What we call it, Codebreaker. Why? Because he played different codes of football. And obviously in the 70s, the ban had gone in the GAA in the early 1970s. But when Kevin...
It had a lasting impact.
And certainly people's minds and people's consciousness, people's attitudes to people who kick, soccer ball as opposed to Gaelic football, etc. But anyway, Kevin, he's a great kind of subject. What a brilliant kind of career, and it's kind of, you know, there's no great jeopardy in this, but it's a great story, well told, and a great one of success and timing is always important in these things. So Kevin kind of was a pitch invader when he was a schoolboy in the Croke Park field in 1974 when Heffo's Dubs won their first All-Ireland in 20 odd years or whatever it was, and next thing 2 years later he's winning an All-Ireland himself, and then he wins another one the next year, and at the age of 21 he's 2 All-Ireland medals in his back pocket when he's scouted for Manchester United.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like the timing is fantastic. So then he's gone over to Man United, and this guy, he could have been an accountant, Dervil, but he's kind of there going, lads, we'll give you a three-year contract. And he's kind of going, do you mind if I think about it? And they're kind of going, yeah, okay. How long do you want? About 3 weeks. Go, oh, yeah, fair enough. So he signs his three-year contract as a young fella, going, you know, sport is a bit of fun. Next thing, of course, he goes on, wins 2 FA Cups, etc., etc. And then his whole career takes him up to his mid to late 30s, which is a great kind of longevity for someone who was battered as much as he was. Buying newspapers on my way here, the newspaper man said, the man of Kevin Moore, and he said he'd go under a bus for a ball. And that's kind of as apt a description of Kevin Moore as a player as you will hear. And this man knew his things. And so he ended up playing the World Cup.
And the impact of sport forms another, I expect to be very popular, documentary, Gaelic in the Joy, with Philly McMahon and Rory O'Connor.
Yes. Another dub who's done very well for himself in the Gaelic football field. It's Philly McMahon, and he's joined by comedian Rory O'Connor, Rory Stories, who, you know, people will know, and people know on this radio station, this programme, in fact. This is the third part, so it's kind of, sport is secondary in this documentary series. It's very much about kind of, I suppose, tackling recidivism and, you know, people's attitudes, particularly younger prisoners, their attitudes to going back inside, you know, kind of those who've offended and reoffended, etc., etc. And I suppose having the gumption...
humanises the people.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, these are largely younger end of the spectrum, kind of young lads, obviously all men, they form a notional kind of Mean Machine was the famous film of Grony Humphreys next week. Mean Machine, of course, was the film, or Porridge, for those of a certain age in the UK might remember Ronnie Barker, but they use that as a cover for Escape. We won't go there. But, you know, so it's this idea of taking on the prison officers, and that's where the jeopardy comes, this documentary actually, and particularly on Wednesday, which is the third part. The first two parts are up on the RT Player if you want to check them out. They're well worth watching. I mean, I suppose Philly brings kind of the idea of the team building, the exercise that the Dubs utilised, you know, of, you know, how many All-Irelands have they won this stage? What, 7 in the last 10
and
years?
And also how I can change the course. I got something
fully. Absolutely.
That talks
and I suppose
about
it's the prisoners taking that step to get involved in this team exercise and team building, and I suppose build notions of trust and kind of respect, self-respect, first of all, respecting other, you know, humans, and then finding a path that might get them into, you know, kind of a different sphere when they leave prison. And I suppose that's the thing you're invested in as a viewer. You're kind of hopeful because there's guys sitting there kind of going, you know, this lad's up in the landing and he's filmed in the ground floor of Mountjoy, and you know that, you know, we all know what prisons look like. They haven't changed since Victorian times. So it's kind of these tiers of wrought iron kind of balconies, and this lad kind of nodding over his shoulder above himself as he's been interviewed on camera, and he kind of says, you know, this lad's here, kind of, you know, been here since, you know, they went in and their kids were, you know, 15, 18 months old, like, and the kids are 12 and 13 now, and they're saying, this won't be me, and you're very invested in hoping that it won't be them, do you know, and the sport is secondary, but it's very, Philly McMahon, just one last thing I'll say on this, is kind of, because you can, you know, mindfulness and, you know, kind of these kind of tying, you know, I suppose they're all in a room and they're kind of, you know, saying nice things about each other. This team building exercises, you know, we're used to it maybe from the corporate world as well. But you can be a bit cynical about these things, but as McMahon says in the last episode, not giving it away, if you put yourself in the way of good decisions, you know, good things can happen and you can move on. And these lads, 3 months prior to filming, weren't anywhere near playing in Croke Park.
From men in prison, Grania, to women in retail, largely but not exclusively women, 406 days. Yes. Talk to me about it.
This is just amazing. I mean, I was very, very lucky actually to have the opportunity. We closed this year's film festival with this film because I felt like it was a wonderful story about Ireland. It's about the 406 days that the Debenham strikers, you know, went out and through the pandemic, basically outside the 11 stores, you know, effectively created, you know, this incredible, you know, community. And the film celebrates that. It's 95% female. So you've wonderful women from all over the country come together. I mean, it's a wonderful beautiful story about collective action, about the kind of networks.
And the producers
and teams.
Went to great extents to fund and get this
they
film out
They did it
there.
All themselves. And there's this wonderful sense of fun and energy and music and laughter at created, if you like, around this, you know, injustice. And the way in which, obviously, the film works itself out is, you know, footage takes us from the very start to the end. But one thing that I'd love to just say is it's a real crowd pleaser. It really connects with an audience. You'll find yourself crying. You'll find yourself cheering.
And it's a reminder of the power of actually coming together.
Of coming together, of connecting together. And there's some wonderful sequences shot inside Henry Street that's like the inside of the Titanic. And it completely contrasts with the women outside and the chanting and the singing and the way in which they kept the spirits alive over that time. It's a really powerful, fantastic film.
From the Titanic to something nautical, Owen, the live action remake of The Little Mermaid,
yes.
and the reaction in some elements of the kind of the far right media in the US to this little remake of
A
Little Mermaid.
Yeah, The Little Mermaid, 1989. It was kind of the beginning of the Disney Renaissance, wasn't it, for animation? Well, it's been remade now, live action, and how bad it. In some parts, it's almost kind of a shot for shot kind of remake, treating the original as kind of a glorified and very colourful storyboard. Huge amount of CGI. Look, 6-year-olds will love it. Do you know what I mean? And they did. There's a few extra songs. Lin-Manuel Miranda has a hand in it. Howard Menken, they wrote some extra tunes. Does it work? Is there any point to it? Well, not really, except it'll make an awful lot of money for Disney. It might be the harbinger of some other, you know, kind of...
The ice skating version coming to...
Well, this is exactly... It could be coming to the... You know, could be end up in the board, gosh, on stage. You never know. Melissa McCarthy's brilliant in it as Ursula, the witch. It's almost... For adults, it's worth it for Javier Bardem as King Triton, standing neck deep in water, acting to, well, basically to himself. And so it's funny. Halle Bailey is the titular mermaid. She's Ariel, a wonderful singer. The irony, of course, is she gives up her voice to become human in the movie. So you've got this wonderful singer who's basically mute for at least 50% of the film,
which is an absolute disaster. I don't.
But kids will love it.
I don't get time to get you for the last word on Succession, which is just as well. I'm currently on season 2. Whatever the opposite of an early adopter is, that is me. So we don't have time to get to that, which is just as well, because maybe everybody else doesn't want to hear spoilers from either radio producer Owen Sweeney and Grainne Humphreys, Festival Director for the Dublin International Film Festival. Thanks a million, as always.